Hi, I'm Aria Evans. Welcome to the D Word podcast, where we work to demystify dance. Forms of movement have been practiced since time immemorial. I'm here to reveal insights into why physical expression matters, what it does in our bodies when we watch it, and how it lives within our daily lives. This season, our theme is transformation, transforming relationships, identity, and our way of thinking and social hierarchies, all through movement. How does dance do this, you might ask? Let's dive in and find out. Today, we'll be chatting with a queen of transformation, Aurora Matrix. A pop princess and dancing diva, Aurora Matrix is the Aries fire of the Toronto drag scene. This queen stands out amongst the crowd with her bold makeup and electrifying dance numbers. Aurora's drag is heavily influenced by her Chinese culture and strives to be a role model for queer Asian youth. Serving plenty of turns, drops, and stunts, you can always expect a full theatrical production from Aurora Matrix. And of course, Aurora is also the first runner-up of season 4 of Canada's Drag Race. Hi, Aurora. I'm so happy you've joined us today.
Thank you so much, Aria. I'm excited to be here.
So my first, like, naive question is, did you grow up in the GTA?
I did. I grew up in Markham.
Wow. Okay.
So there were a lot of Asian people around. I was seeing kind of Asian culture everywhere. And that's kind of my upbringing, my history before I moved to Toronto.
Amazing. And you've decided to stay in the city.
I have. Honestly, I really think that it was the best move for me because I'm closer to where everything is, where all the action is. I kind of love the hustle and bustle of the city. It gives me like purpose and a drive to always be doing something different.
And I feel like with what you do too, there's such a center here to have a platform or a stage for your work.
100%.
And my understanding, so you grew up in Markham. You were exposed to the arts as a kid. Musical theater was in your world. But without having formal training, what was your relationship to movement as you were growing up?
I've always been a very active kid, not necessarily in sports, but just like energy wise.
Yeah.
So always a mover, always not sitting still. My mom was always calling after me and being like, hey, get back here. Hey, get back here. Stay here for
really
now.
Story.
So I don't know. I've always just loved exploring movement. I always thought that creating shapes with the body was very pretty. And I guess I didn't really understand any of that until it was like, oh, like there's a place where I don't have to be just a dancer, but it's just use my body. And through exploring that, I really learned to love my body even more.
When you say like you learned to love your body, were there anything movement-wise you were drawn to that you were like, this feels really good to like be and become?
Ooh, I mean, definitely being in drag. Yeah. there is a instant transformation that happens. Like once the wig is on, once the padding is on, everything just comes together. It's just like, oh, like the persona comes out, the energy. It's like from within. I really do love that.
How old were you when you put your first, like you're talking about padding, like when when did that sort of journey begin for you?
Honestly, it was a little later in life. I started doing drag in university.
Oh, wow.
So this was like when I first moved out of home and started living by myself. I was really exploring my own gender expression and how I carry myself and where I sit in the queer community in Toronto. So when I was in university, I really got to explore my own queerness and gender identity. And, you know, I love theater. I've been a theater student my whole life, and I had a fascination with makeup and the artistry of that. So I decided, like, why not put the two together and create this new person called Aurora Matrix? And I feel like that was really when I started to come into my own body and, like, just enjoy people watching me dance and move. Like I found that I had that passion and it made me feel very happy. So here I am.
Yeah, here you
here
are.
I am.
And those steps that you were taking in, I'm imagining you in university being like, I want a place to express myself. Like, what is my community? Where am I at home?
Mm-hmm.
How, like, for somebody who might be feeling those same things, how did you find the drag community? Like, were you on Facebook? Were you like Googling? Were you looking at, like, I don't know.
Actually, it's funny you bring up Facebook, because when I first started doing drag about like 5 years ago,
yeah,
Facebook kind of was the place to look for those events. I saw on Facebook that there was like, oh, an open stage happening. And then from there, I went to the Instagram, found who was hosting it. And then that's when I messaged and was like, hey, I would love to join the next one that's happening. So yeah, just kind of searching online and finding what spaces had those opportunities to go on stage and explore whatever type of drag or movement I wanted to do on stage. It's pretty cool. And I'm very proud that I kind of started from rock bottom of like, hey, messaging people, give me a show, to being booked now so that I could be their headliner. It's wild to think of that.
It takes a lot. Like, I'm thinking about me as a young dancer and coming into my own identity in that space. And it takes a lot of confidence to find yourself and to just put yourself out there and to like send those emails. Where does that sense of self-knowledge come from for you?
When I was younger, I feel like I was kind of like boxed into behaving a certain way, especially as like a from a religious traditional Chinese background. My parents had a very specific idea of what they wanted their son to grow up to be, and I feel like I was very boxed in the way that I couldn't act a certain way, I couldn't speak a certain way. So now that I kind of have the liberty of being me, I know in my heart that I'm like, oh, this is the true me. Like, when I meet people, when I act, when I dance, when I'm moving on stage, like, people get to kind of see another layer of me. Like, something that's a little more deeper and personal.
That's beautiful. And I love that you talk about drag being able to offer that. I think, like, a lot of our listeners come from the contemporary dance world where we associate a certain, like, value or social connotation to the work that we're making.
Mm-hmm.
But to hear you talk about drag in that way, I'm like, you're doing the same thing in a very different way, and it's really beautiful. My mind was just like, all of those preconceived ideas that we might have about like the more commercial kinds of performance that exist. Thank you for sharing. This name you have for yourself, Aurora Matrix, and I remember emailing you and being like, why the name? And you were like, Aurora like the princess, Matrix like the movie. And I was like, of course. And I'm curious, like, where your civilian identity intersects with this public persona.
Wow, I feel like this is something that I've been tackling since I started drag. Because when I'm in my full transformation of Aurora, there is a bump in confidence, like a boost in something in me where it's like, oh, I can walk into the room and I know people will part the way for me. I know people will look at me. And there's definitely some like power there that I've started to bring into my everyday life more, because it's still me. And I've found that I've used drag almost as a mask for the longest time.
Interesting.
And now post Drag Race, post whatever fame you may call this, I'm starting to learn that eyes are on me 24/7, you know? I gotta just kinda always be on. And I've learned to bring that confidence in myself and, you know, just like express myself unapologetically, whether I'm in drag or not, because I only have this one body, and when people see me, it's gonna be Aurora regardless of if I'm in drag or not.
Yeah.
Just learning to be comfortable with like, okay, people will take you as you are, and they just gotta accept that.
What a beautiful gift. Also, for those who don't know, Aurora is Sleeping Beauty. When you're performing, are you improvising or is it set?
For the most part, it is improvised, which,
wow,
which a lot of people are very shocked by, because I know a lot of people who at home will go through the songs and be like, okay, at this moment, I'm going to do this. And then for this chorus, I'm going to do this movement. And for me, that doesn't work well with me, unless it's a fully choreographed dance, then that's a different idea. But for me, for the most part, when I go on stage, I really do just improvise on the spot. I feed off of the audience a lot of the time, especially if it's a song that they know and everyone's singing along. Maybe I might move less and just focus more on the lip sync and just connecting with the audience. And then knowing that something else is going to come up, be like, okay, I know I'm going to do something there, but I never plan out like, here's a split, here's a cartwheel, yeah, you know, here's a little back bend. I like to surprise myself on stage as well. And I think that keeps everyone on their toes. And it's exciting for myself, too. I like to keep myself interested when I'm performing.
Without giving theater school all the credit, how do you feel like that like improvisational nature was developed within you?
I've always been kind of class clowny. Yeah. And it's like, ooh, what's the next idea of things to make myself stand out in this group of students, in this gathering of family members? I always just had that nature of like, wanting to be a performer and wanting to do whatever. So I feel like growing up, I was always put on the spot like, oh, Aurora, like, why don't you do a little dance for us? Or, oh, why don't you sing a song for us?
You're
and
like,
it
sure.
And it was never something planned, but I was always down to do it because yeah. I'm like, oh, this is my 5 minutes of fame right now. And I'm 6 years old at my grandma's house. But again, in that moment, I am a pop star.
Well, speaking now of your like 5 years of fame.
Exactly.
I joke about, I contemplate signing up for reality TV. But honestly, like the idea of people having access to me somehow feels extremely intimidating. What made you say yes to Canada's Drag Race?
I feel like it's been joked about in the drag community that like Drag Race is the Olympics of drag.
Yeah.
And I mean, you get tested on sewing, on dancing, on songwriting, on everything. I felt like that was the ultimate test. And when I went into school, I knew that I wanted to finish school completely before even trying to audition for the show.
Yeah.
So graduated, I finished school, and everything just kind of lined up perfectly for me. I'd finished a theater gig, so I was finally free. And I was like, you know what? Like, if I get through this audition process and if I get onto the show, I'm gonna give it my all and I'm gonna go in there with the mindset that I already won.
Yeah.
You know? And it really pushed me. And I think that was one of the biggest things. And also wanting to share my experiences, not just in the drag community, but in the queer community in Toronto as an Asian body, as someone who's non-binary. There's just so many things that I wanted to be able to share to the world because I never had that growing up. And I know that that will be helpful for people, even just to hear an experience that someone could relate to changes the world for me.
Hmm. Did you see a transformation throughout your time on Drag Race, like with Aurora or with yourself?
I wouldn't say that I saw the transformation in myself, but it was pointed out to me.
Oh, interesting.
When I came back from filming, I was gone for however long. And when I came back, a lot of my close friends were like, you've changed. Not like in a bad way, but it's just like you carry yourself differently. Mm. Almost knowing like I went through that experience of the toughest type of drag that I could do at that time.
Yeah.
And after weeks and weeks of filming, I feel like I came back a whole new queen. I came back a whole new person. Even before Drag Race, I was always a very high energy performer, giving you 110%. And like, that's just the style of performance that I do. But when I came back from Drag Race, that's when a lot of people started really pointing out my performance style. And even my closest friends would say like, oh, every lip sync now is a lip sync for your life. You used to give 110%, now you're giving 150%, you're giving 200%. And I think for me, it really challenged me to kind of change up the way that I perform. I was stuck in the same way of performing for 4 years, but for the first 4 years of my drag, I did get very comfortable in the way that I was performing, doing the same songs, the same kind of 8 count that comes in at the chorus. And I think when I came back from Drag Race, I was like, oh, there's just so much more for me to explore.
And what other reason does anyone need to come see you perform?
Oh, I'm so dumb on the mic. When you come see a show from me, you'll get some witty banter as well. And I will single out the cute people in the crowd, flirt a little. You know, it's not that serious. And a drag show is always going to be silly and fun.
The Dance Current magazine loves drag, and we love supporting dance communities across the country. We know it's hard to treat yourself right now, but you deserve a little something. So we're offering the D-Word listeners 25% off subscriptions until the end of August. Just use the code TDCSUMMER. That's TDCSUMMER at thedancecurrent.com/subscribe. Don't miss our hot summer issue on newsstands at the end of the month. Want to contribute to our fall issue? Email submissions at thedancecurrent.com by August 26th. I love hearing you talk about people seeing themselves represented in you and this exchange of you, I went through something and you've expressed that they're going through it too, you're going through it. How do you hold the representation burden, like not, and I don't mean burden in necessarily a bad way, but how does that like manifest for you, that being able to be an example for other people?
It's tough. Yeah, maybe burden might not be the word, but there's a lot of weight to that, knowing that, like, at least for me, when I was on the show, I'm representing all of East Asia. I'm like, when I think right. of that, I'm like, that's crazy. But I don't know. It gave me the opportunity to speak up about things that have been in my mind forever that I've always wanted to hear. And it almost pushed me to be like, no, you have to speak up. Mm. You have to speak up about things you're passionate about concerns you have about certain topics. It's just because I know that I would have needed to hear that when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is my opportunity. And I have the chance to share how I feel about things. And I think that now that I'm in the public eye, people do look for my POV. They look for my perspective and how I feel about the stuff that's going on in the world and my own personal life.
Yeah, I love how our values and our relationship to politics can be embedded into everything that we do. It's beautiful to hear you talk about that. I'm curious, when you've talked about you often will improvise in your numbers, but when you have an idea for like a song or a dance number, what are the steps to getting it from like that initial idea to like in front of a crowd at Cruise and Tango?
I love story.
Mm.
I don't just want to go on stage and perform a number for 3 minutes just because I have to.
Yeah, well, why?
You know, if I'm given an opportunity, it's like, okay, you have 5 minutes, you can do a mix, you could mash up songs, whatever you want, but you just have 5 minutes. I will think about, my formula is always a song, a monologue in the middle that's spliced in there.
Ooh.
And it transitions into another number. So for example, for Halloween once, I did Mystique from X-Men, the all blue, the shape-shifting.
Nice.
So I started with a slow song and then clip in a little monologue from one of the movies that transitions into something else. I feel like that for me works so well because it's a form of storytelling without it having to be too complicated. And I don't want the audience to have to do work while they're watching me. So it's an easy way to have them follow something without overcomplicating it. And then for me, it also makes it a little different than just a regular club number, you know. And I think that kind of gives me a little push to change up my numbers a little bit and give story, because I think that's more interesting to watch.
You talked a little bit about like Toronto having it all.
Uh-huh.
I'm curious because, you know, we're in Canada and there are other countries that there's a lot of negativity that's being put out into the world towards drag queens and the queer community. Where do you think we're at in that conversation here in Canada or here even in Toronto?
Overall, I would say we're doing quite well here in the sense that, like, when you go out in drag, there's always that scare of like, oh, is someone gonna say something or people are gonna be rude. But in my personal experience, I haven't experienced that a lot, and I'm very lucky with that. And I think a lot of people in this world are honestly just scared of what they don't know.
Yeah, I think it's coming from fear as well.
Right? Yeah. And like, I say, like, the best way of learning about the drag scene, about drag culture, is just go to a drag brunch. Go to something that's low stakes, kind of just during the day. Because you just think like, oh, person in a wig and they're standing at 6 feet tall and they're like looking down at you. Yeah, that's going to be a little scary. But once you see that, like, we don't really take it that serious. Like a drag brunch, for example, that's like one of the silliest opportunities for drag queens to just kind of do whatever they want. And everyone's drinking their sangrias. Everyone's drinking their mimosas. Everyone's there to have a good time. I would say, like, people just go to a drag show, learn about it, watch the magic unfold and the stupidity, you know, just blossom.
I actually teach movement in at a theater school.
Oh, love that.
So funny. I love the little world connections. But one of the things that I talk to my students about when I'm considering, like, how do we expand audiences? How do we bring new people into our artistic disciplines? And I always say, like, bring someone who has no relationship to, in this case, it's theater, to a show with you, and then have a conversation with them. So I feel like there's also an offer there of, like, bring people to drag, like what you're saying, like bring in community, experience it, make it something that people have access to and can understand. Because I agree, I think fear holds us back, but there's nothing to be afraid of.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious about, like, reflecting from where you are now and this, like, young kid mm-hmm. in Markham, growing up with religious parents.
Yeah.
If you could, like, speak directly to that young you, what would you tell them about your life right now?
Oh, I would say you're a star. Mm. I was like, you want to perform, you're going to perform. I was like, you want to move around, you're going to move around. You want space to run around and dance, like, you're going to have those spaces. And it just takes patience. I feel like it's very cliche to say it gets better.
Yeah.
But going back to when I was younger, I definitely just needed to hear that more. Just be patient. It does get better. And that kind of worked out for me. I came out young, gave my parents time to process that. Now they're my biggest supporters.
Wow. It's
been such a full circle moment. And I think when I was little, I was always in a rush to grow up to, like, I want to do this, I want to do this, and I want to be independent on my own. Hmm. But now I'm just like, take your time. Hmm. Like, there's no rush to do that. And you never stop learning. And There's always going to be something that you can improve on, that you can change about yourself, that for the better. And I think if I could go back, I would just relax a little bit.
Ah.
It's really not that serious. I will find my own people. I will find my group. I will find the people that will uplift me in everything that I do.
Did you have role models growing up, or are you filling that gap now?
Definitely filling that gap now. Yeah, just seeing a queer Asian body in media was not very common, especially like, again, growing up with my parents, I was watching like maybe like Hong Kong dramas and all that, where the masculine and feminine is very separate. You have those characters that are like, I'm a man, this, that.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I'm a lady and I like this. And I'm just like, it doesn't have to be that concrete. It's not that solid, you know? There is that gray area where you can just kind of exist in between. Mm. I'm learning that and I'm exploring that every day in my life.
Isn't that what we're here for? My final question to close this fantastic conversation is, what has been a transformational moment for you in your life as a drag performer?
I hate to bring it back to Drag Race.
Bring it back!
But my package in general, I always tried to incorporate my culture into my runway looks. And specifically, my finale look was this empress gown with sleeves that hit the ground. It was my most expensive runway. I really splurged on that one just because I knew that I wanted to walk out into that finale as that, like, Asian empress energy. And every time I look back on that moment, I just am so proud of myself and so happy that I was able to explore that and share that. Because I feel like back in China, like, the man was always the most dominant one in the family.
Yeah.
But kind of reclaiming that and being like, I'm a queen.
Mm-hmm.
Bow down to me and this is my reign. And it's just feeling that moment of, like, everything my parents have taught me in my past, whether it was positive or negative, how it affected me, it really did boil down to that moment of, like, this is my culture. This is who I am. This is who I was brought up to be. And I'm going to take my teachings from my parents, rework it into my own drag, and express it in a way that I think is aesthetically beautiful and true to myself.
Hmm. What an answer. Where can people find more out about you?
Ooh, well, we are stepping into the summer. It's Pride season, especially in Canada. We have Pride pretty much all the way until the first week of September. So
yep.
I'm going to be traveling all of Canada, doing Prides in all the big cities. And you can always find me on Instagram at Aurora Matrix. I feel like that's where you can get all the up-to-date stuff about me, because that's where I live my life.
Awesome. Well, as Aurora said, you can find her on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And that's our show. The D Word is presented by Dance Made in Canada, a biennial contemporary dance festival featuring Canadian dance artists with unique artistic visions from all cultural backgrounds. The D Word is produced by Mayumi Lashbrook with Taylor Young, editor and composer Damar Powell, sound engineer Chris Dupuis at 1990 Studios, and cover photography by Marlo Porter. And I'm your host, Aria Evans. Thank you to Canadian Heritage, the Canada Council for the Arts, Ontario Arts Council, and Toronto Arts Council for making The D Word possible. Find us wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to rate and review. Let dance transform you.